BQ Big Decisions, the Bloomberg Quint podcast that helps you make the right financial choices. Hello, and thanks for listening in. I'm Alex Matthew, and this is the BQ Big Decisions podcast. First of all, on behalf of everyone here at Bloomberg Quint, here's wishing you a very happy and prosperous new year. 2019 has ended, and so too has the second decade of this century and millennium. You know, I've always believed that the start of a new year is a great time to not just make a new beginning, but also to introspect and to identify things that went wrong over the past year. So, on this New Year's edition of BQ Big Decisions, we're going to be talking about the biggest learnings from 2019 and what to do to ensure that you have Vision 2020 with regard to your finances in the new year and decade. My guest today is Amol Joshi, the founder of Planrupi Investments. Thank you so much, Amol, for joining me today.
Alex, pleasure to be here with you.
And Happy New Year.
Wish you the same. Thank you.
Now, I do want to start with, I think, what everyone refers to when they talk about the markets, which is the equity markets.
Sure.
And I want to talk about the year that has been, 2019. The gains have been decent, especially for the benchmarks, particularly for the benchmarks.
If you look at the index, yes.
Yes. Let's talk about that a little bit. Mm-hmm. People have spoken about the fact that the indexes have gained, the benchmarks have gained, despite the gloom and doom scenario that has been painted about the economy. So perhaps one of the big learnings is that the markets, at least the benchmarks,
sure,
and the economy, don't necessarily move in tandem.
Yes, Alex, that's correct. In fact, the broader market slide, especially on the mid and small caps, started way back in 2018. And the trigger was the budget of 2018, 1st February, when the long-term capital gain tax, which was earlier zero, was hiked to 10%.
Yeah.
And over last 1.5-2 years, the time since that budget, the GDP scenario, if you look at GDP as an indicator, GDP has deteriorated.
Yes.
But as you could see, the market deteriorated long back. Mm. And market is now, at least on the large cap side, the way you mentioned, at least on the handful number of stocks on the large cap or mega cap side, have been doing really well over last 1 year.
Yeah.
You could say in one way that market is a forward-looking animal. Mm. So market predicted a lower GDP 1.5 years back. Mm. This could be probably an indication that we are bottoming out, and that's why markets are running ahead of the fundamentals. Mm. Only time will tell if this theory is correct or not, but the fact is there for all of us to see. Markets have been doing well. Last but not the least, only a handful, let's say a dozen, 10, 12, 15 stocks have been doing well. The broader market still has a lot of opportunities, especially on the mid and small cap side.
So in a sense, there is significant opportunity to be had in the equity markets. But on the other hand, especially if you have exposure primarily to large caps, one would think that this is a time to be a little cautious.
Yes, I would say that, especially because large cap, they are running, what is the right word to say, on firing on all cylinders. So large caps have been really doing well. And this is the time. See, if you follow a typical model, which I suggest all investors that they should, of asset allocation. So asset allocation does not necessarily mean debt equity. Mm. Within equity also, you have to allocate efficiently to large, mid and small caps.
Okay.
Your large cap portfolio that has gone up by, let's say, a 10-20%. At the same time, your mid and small caps are looking down by 20-30%. So this is a good time to rebalance. Mm. So obviously, if your large cap portfolio has grown bigger, it is time probably to do some sort of a profit booking and enter mid and small cap.
Understood.
So this will get your asset allocation back in order. And by default, it would reduce some exposure from large caps where there is a, you know, one can say that the valuations are probably fair value plus. From that level, you can allocate some funds to a fair value or rather, I would say a cheaper value mid and small caps.
That's a great way to look at it. And in fact, what better time to do it than the new year, right?
So sure. Yes.
This is a perfect time to look at it. I do want to ask you, And this is a very broad question, and I must put a caveat out mm-hmm. here that we've had several conversations in the past, even on BQ Big Decisions, about allocation.
Yes.
And asset allocation being 9/10 of the rule.
Correct.
But having said that, there are various factors that play into each individual's asset allocation.
Yes.
Now, having said that, I still want to ask you, from the perspective of a planner and from the perspective of an advisor, mm-hmm. when you look at the scenario as it stands today, would you say that it would be beneficial to perhaps consider a higher allocation towards mid cap and small cap? And in 2020, you should be a little more aggressive where that is concerned?
Right. So, absolutely, Alex, I couldn't agree more. In fact, in my previous answer, I mentioned that you should rebalance out of large cap into mid and small caps. So, yes, I subscribe to that theory and also to what you said just now. The second point, Alex, here is, again, go back to basics. When we say go to mid caps and small caps, mid cap and small cap is never a 6 month, 1 year, 2 year asset class.
Yes.
It's a 5 year, 7 year, 10 year asset class. If you think that you have a horizon of, let's say, 7 years ahead of you, 10 mm. years ahead of you, mm. no better time than today. See, it's always remember, gold comes into the focus when it crosses 40,000, mm. but nobody talks about it last 7 years when it was trading close by to 30,000 mm. value. So you should always buy when the chips are down. Mm. You should always buy when the asset class is not doing very well. If you bought gold at 40,000, you are probably looking at flat returns or probably some negative returns at this moment. Mm. Using the same analogy, especially because mid and small caps are down anywhere between 15% to 40%, I'm talking on a broad level.
Yeah.
There are some stocks that are 90% down.
Yeah.
Again, one more caveat over here. I'm not saying something that is down 90% should be bought now.
It should be
so if you are skillful in picking up stocks, then you could take that decision on your own. But if not, you can probably go to a managed portfolio. By managed portfolio, I mean that a fund manager who is running a mid cap or a small cap fund. One more line over here. You can also take an exposure to mid and small caps via multi caps. It is okay. not necessarily go to a true mid cap or a true small cap fund. Mm-hmm. Multi cap fund by definition can take exposure to mid and small caps. Yes. And many of multi-cap funds do have a mid and small cap exposure.
To your point on buying when the chips are down, I think one of the thumb rules that a lot of people talk about is that 80% of gains come in 20% of the time, which
sure,
is why you
yes,
should hold
yes,
for a long
that's
time.
Correct.
All right. So I think that more or less covers your equity portion of your portfolio.
Alex.
But I do want to talk about another thing that's occurred. And I must state here that the onset of this was in 2018, Amol, but it came into sharper focus in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the way that investors approach debt mutual funds. I'm referring, of course, to the precipitous fall in debt portfolios that was heralded by the default of ILNFS.
That's correct.
And that's played out in 2019. Would you say, first of all, that it's a good thing that investors are now approaching debt mutual funds with a little more caution? And how do you see this space developing?
Okay, so any sort of a NAV fall is never good for investors.
Of course.
Wouldn't like it.
Of course.
But I still am going to agree with you over here that it was good that it happened. Why it was good is because investors in mutual fund, and there is a disclaimer that has been, a part of many social media jokes and forwards. Mutual funds are subject to market risks. So even in debt segment, mutual funds do have a market risk.
Yes.
This is not to say that everything is risky and you shouldn't go.
Mm.
In every aspect of life and financial life, there are risks, and those risks present some opportunities and some returns and rewards.
Yeah.
So the credit events that we spoke about definitely are a learning to an investor. So I would say that this learning you can put to use in two ways. One is if you're truly a conservative investor who has graduated from fixed deposits and PPF sort of instruments where you almost never saw any capital volatility, as well as there was an interest guarantee.
Mm.
In mutual funds, you will do well if you go to a completely AAA, 80 to 100% AAA portfolio,
mm.
or a banking and PSU debt fund, or even liquid funds. If you stay for 3 years in any of these instruments, your biggest gains are going to come to you from indexation tax benefit.
Very quickly, and I must say that we have spoken about indexation when we spoke about corporate bonds and bonds per se. But this is, if you hold for 3 years and above in a debt mutual fund, you essentially get indexation benefits, which very simply means that your returns are minus the inflation over that three-year period are taxable.
That's correct. Your returns, the returns that you generate over and above inflation. So I don't want to make it number heavy, but let's see it via some numbers. And again, you have already said that it is for 3 years, and which I have also mentioned. But let's take, for simplicity, let's take example over a one-year period.
Sure.
Over a one-year period, if your debt fund generates 7% return, and in that 1 year, if the inflation is 5%, in a normal fixed deposit, your entire 7% gain would be taxed at your tax slab.
Yeah.
In mutual funds, however, if you get an indexation benefit, 7% minus 5% inflation, only 2% component will be taxed. Now, it's a common sense and it's very easy to understand that a tax on full 7 rupees will be several times higher than tax on 2 rupee component. And that is the substantial gain that I was talking about.
Especially if you are in the higher tax bracket, which is the 30%.
Of course. Higher the tax bracket, more is the in-hand return that you take home in mutual funds. Of course, if you stay for longer than 3 years, that's when the indexation benefit is applicable.
Now, the other thing, and of course, it goes without saying that you must approach credit risk funds, therefore, based on all the credit events that we spoke about, with a fair deal of caution.
Yes. So I mentioned, Alex, there are two learnings. The first learning we spoke about, you better stay in a AAA portfolio or even a liquid portfolio or a banking and PSU debt fund sort of a portfolio. Yeah. All these are safer. Second learning is, you now know that in credit risk, the name is not for nothing. Yes. The name credit risk itself tells you that there is some kind of credit risk. Again, as I mentioned in my previous answer, with risk comes some kind of returns or reward.
Yeah.
That reward is a higher yield if fund manager is able to navigate the credit space nicely. Mm. Now, there are 40 mutual funds in India, but you saw the credit defaults or credit events, as industry calls it, in a handful of mutual fund houses. Let's say 4 or 5 mutual fund houses only. Other remaining mutual funds have been able to navigate that credit space nicely. Mm. If you stay for 3 years, so let me take the same old example. In a AAA portfolio, if you make 7% today, in a credit fund, if credit fund is able to navigate credit space safely, you are likely to make something over and above simply 7%. Because you are buying a lower rated credit.
Yes.
So instead of a 7, theoretically, you are likely to make, let's say, 8-8.5%.
Sure.
Now, that's the additional gain. But mind you, you should know, and that's the second learning, you should know that credit funds mean the lower rated credit exposure is there in your portfolio. In an event that the company doesn't do well, that portfolio will take a hit to the extent of the credit default. Mm. Having said that, if you trust your fund manager and if you are willing to stay put for 3 years, the impact would be minimal.
Fair enough. All right. Now, I do want to speak about the impact of these credit events on the yields that have been experienced over the last year in these corporate bond funds.
Sure.
They've gone up.
Yes.
And this is despite the fact that you've seen a 135 basis point cut in the repo rates by the RBI.
Yes, Alex.
Having said that, when you're positioning yourself in the debt mutual fund space in 2020, what do you bear in mind? Do you stick with what you've said in terms of the, you know, PSU bank funds, your government bond funds, or do you diversify a little bit?
So I want to answer this in two parts. Number one is credit spreads have gone up. So it's a simple function of risk and return. When you see a lot of credit events taking place, and by you, I mean market participants. When market participants see that, the economic scenario or debt repayment scenario is not very good, market doesn't want to lend at the same rate 1.5 years back.
Yeah.
The rate that was prevailing, let's say 2 years back.
Because it is
market
desire.
Would want to compensate, to get compensated for the higher risk environment that market is seeing. That's why the rates have gone up.
Yeah.
That rates having gone up is probably a bad news for existing portfolio, because existing portfolio will get some hit on their valuations.
Yeah.
But it's a good news for somebody who wants to enter afresh. Now, for taking. Now, I wouldn't say that for many good companies, anything has changed over the last 1 and 1.5 years, neither the business model nor the way they conduct or operate themselves. But what has changed is this perception. So you are probably getting same bond of the same company at a higher rate. So as a new investor, again, if you understand what credit risk is all about, probably this is a good time to invest. So that's the first part. And second part, you mentioned whether you should stick in view of higher spreads. Should you go to credit risk or should you stick to PSU bonds and AAA funds? Now, let me again borrow from my previous answer where I said that in equity also you do asset allocation between large, mid and small. So what stops you from doing the same asset allocation in debt as well?
Understood.
So again, go with your risk portfolio. If you are a risk averse investor, I would say 70% or upwards of your portfolio should be in pure AAA.
Sure.
And only a marginal portfolio of 20-30% could be in a credit risk sort of a portfolio. If you are a risk taker within within the debt component, and if you have a 3-year, 5-year horizon of investment in that debt component, I wouldn't say, and again, I repeat that if you understand what credit is all about and if you are confident about your fund manager, fund manager's skills of navigating the credit space, I would say that you can go probably as high as 50 to 60%, 50 to 70% in credit and remaining 30 to 40% in a stable AAA portfolio. That will come handy for you if you need any liquidity in between.
Now, Amol, one of the main principles and objectives of this BQ Big Decisions podcast has been to ensure that my listeners know which questions to ask. So I think this goes without saying, but I'm still going to mention it here, and perhaps you can add your view on this as well.
Sure.
If an advisor is saying that they can get you a debt instrument with 10%+ returns, that should be an immediate red flag.
Alex, it goes without saying, when your fixed deposits from a PSU lender, PSU bank is fetching you about 6% today, please understand, 10% actually means 66% more return than a PSU fixed deposit. Yeah. That's an extremely high level of spread which you're not going to make. This is equivalent of saying at the fag end of 2017 that small caps will fetch you 80% or a 60% return. It does happen, but it doesn't happen every day, every month, every year. Small caps fetched that sort of a return in that one calendar, and then we know what happened over the last 2 years. Currently, the 10% returns or 9% plus returns, what you see in a longer dated portfolios of mutual funds, is purely a function of rates coming down. This is not going. So from current level, I don't think many market participants are expecting 100 or 200 basis points of rate cut. Long story short, yes, 10% is not a debt return that you should target. I typically like to say, and again, there are the scope of this talk probably will not, I will not be able to cover all the aspects, but typically please understand that you are likely to generate FD plus one, FD plus two sort of returns in a well-managed, diversified portfolio of mutual funds, not beyond that.
Fair enough. The other major change in the debt scenario or the debt landscape, so to speak, has been the introduction of the Bharat Bond ETF, which took place not too long back, Amol. And we've had a comprehensive conversation on this very podcast, but I'd like your view on this as well. Experts have said that it's a good idea to subscribe to this Bharat Bond ETF and hold to maturity. Do you ascribe to that as well?
Correct. So Bharat Bond ETF that was recently launched has a 3-year plus and a 10-year plus sort of a maturity. Why I'm saying plus is because although it was launched in December, the maturity is in the month of April 2023 and April 2030. The reason is by doing this, in a 3-year mutual fund, 3-year, 3-month, 3-year, 4-month mutual fund, you'll be able to get 4 indexations. Mm-hmm. And in a 10-year mutual fund, you'll get an 11-year indexation. So that's one of the huge benefits that you can take from being an investor over there, number one. Number two, we all know that Bharat Bond, as the name suggests, is a mutual fund that invests only in PSU or government-owned companies' bonds, that too in a AAA-rated space. Last but not the least, this mutual fund has next to nothing. 0.0005 is the expense ratio. In my books, it is a 0% expense ratio fund. So what company pays as an interest for their borrowings, the entire interest comes to you in a mutual fund capital gain format. So I would say that these are very decent instruments, a 3-year plan as well as a 10-year plan. You could look at it. I would like to add one thing though over here. Since these are mutual funds, you would do a lot better if you actually have a 3 year plus or a 10 year plus instrument and you don't want to buy or sell, you don't want to especially sell in between. Although the fund house has said that they have engaged market makers to provide a lot of liquidity, yeah. It remains to be seen. Existing ETFs on equity side, even larger ETFs, do not have a lot of liquidity.
Sure.
Again, in one line, Bharat Bond is a good debt offering. If you stay for 3 years or 10 years with indexation, you will make very decent gains and it is a good addition to your debt portfolio.
All right. Now, to just round off the conversation, Amol, on asset classes, we have to talk about gold because it's been, and you mentioned this a little while back when you spoke about the stellar returns that gold has had over the last year.
Yes.
18% or thereabouts has been the global increase in gold prices. And that's a significant risk. I think what is more significant is the fact that this has happened despite a run-up in equities globally. Normally, you see a risk-off tone that leads to a rise in gold prices. Correct. But there have been various reasons that have been given as to why gold has risen. There is uncertainty globally with regard to the trade war, and there is central bank buying and all of that. But having said that, even on this podcast, there have been experts that come and say 10% is what you should have in terms of exposure out of your entire portfolio to gold, irrespective of where the gold prices are. Do you hold true with that?
Correct, Alex. So 5 to 10% should be your exposure in your entire financial portfolio towards precious metals. I do agree with this view. I would like to add over here that we get a lot of questions from investors about whether sectoral funds are a good idea at so and so point in time. Is a pharma fund good? Is IT fund good? Is infrastructure fund good? I would say that gold and sectoral funds, about 5 to 10% each, both of them probably not exceeding a 15%. It's sort of allocation that you have. Remaining 85 rupees of your portfolio should be allocated between debt and equity. Again, go back to basics. It should be allocated to debt and equity in line with your risk appetite.
Fair enough. Now, I do want to ask you, because there is this confusion that a lot of people have, Amol, is that if you have jewelry, say it's jewelry that your mom has passed down
to you, or your
grandmother has passed on to you, do you ascribe a value to that also and add it to your portfolio, or do you just keep it as something that you will never ever sell?
In short, you do not count that into the valuation that you are currently looking at. And I also mentioned in my answer, you will remember, Alex, 1 minute back, that gold should be 5 to 10% of your financial portfolio. Ah. So anything that is in a jewelry format, we are not even talking about coins or biscuits, because coins and biscuits, you cannot actually wear them as a gold article. But anything that is jewelry is actually a consumption item. You should not count that in your gold holding. It is purely a consumption item.
All right. Well, that clears up the air, at least for me. I don't want to talk about one last topic, or maybe there are a couple, but this is something that caused a lot of panic. I think it continues to do so. The issue with dematerialized shares, and that was the Karvi incident that raised a lot of eyebrows. For the listeners who are unaware of what exactly happened, can you very quickly take us through what happened and why there was so much concern, and how can an investor or somebody who's having dematerialized shares safeguard themselves against this?
In simple terms, and the way some of the SEBI's rulings or press releases or SEBI's action that we have seen in the market, in simple terms, a lot of investors who had their shares in a DMAT account held with Karvi, their shares were pledged by Karvi to NBFCs or banks, and a loan was raised against those shares, and the amount, obviously, the investors never wanted that loan. The amount that was raised went to Karvi, and Karvi used it for other purposes of their other business. Now, this is completely out of line, and you don't expect this at all from any of the service provider, that your assets will be used for something that you are not signed up for.
Sure.
So that's what you mentioned what happened briefly. So this is what has happened. Now, I'm sure investors would want to know how to safeguard from that.
Yeah.
How to safeguard from that? How it happened actually is those shares were transferred from their DMAT to a pooled account. This can have, again, this cannot happen unless investor gives explicit instruction. Now that investors say that we never give such and such instruction, but investors are probably forgetting that when you open a DMAT and trading account with a provider, service provider, you are signing a power of attorney.
Correct.
And that power of attorney plays a part into this. That power of attorney, via that POA, you have given lots of rights to your service provider, via which those accounts were Those DMAT shares were transferred to a pool account or to a different account. How to safeguard? First and foremost, revisit the power of attorney that you have signed. If it gives blanket all the rights if you have signed off, then probably you can do away from that power of attorney. You can revoke that power of attorney. You can enter into a power of attorney that doesn't give all the rights. Sure. And only upon your explicit instructions should any transaction take place. That's one way to safeguard yourself. Second way to safeguard is, usually you get a statement from NSDL or CDSL, as well as I'm sure most of people today would have online access to DMAT account where your DMAT holding statement is there. Periodically, please check your DMAT holding statement or the NSDL CDSL statement that reaches your mailbox. Please ensure that all the shares that as per your record should be in your possession are reflecting in those. Any discrepancy, please highlight it to the please highlight to your DMAT and trading partner or a service provider. If you do not get a satisfactory response from their side, please take it to the next level in terms of complaining to the market regulator. These are some of the ways which you essentially should put into practice, because this is something that probably has never happened, at least in my memory. But that has now happened, and this is the way to safeguard yourself from this happening to you.
So be vigilant in the new year. I want to take one last topic, and I know, Amol, that this is something that you can spend a lot of time speaking about. It's the whole concept of buying a house on a loan.
Right.
And I ask this because the State Bank of India just recently announced that it was cutting its home loan rates by 25 basis points.
Sure.
It's come to 7.9%. So it starts at 7.9% now. What I want to ask you, and we've had this conversation of should you buy or should you rent, I would think that just because the rates are now, well, relatively more affordable, it shouldn't mean that you should go out and buy a house.
That's correct, Alex. You will buy a house only if it is one of your needs and requirements. What we spoke about gold is also true over here. Anything that you wear in a format of gold jewelry is not your financial asset. So anything, any house property or a flat that you stay into is not your financial property. It is one of probably your needs and requirements. Again, this probably is out of scope of this discussion, whether buy versus rent. But if you have made a decision to buy, this is a good time because EMIs have come down. But if you are not looking to buy a home, and because the EMI has come down, because rates have come down, because rates might go up tomorrow in a theoretical discussion. So obviously, you will all your buy and sell decisions in any financial investment, including the real estate investment, should be based on your actual need. And it should not be motivated by it only the EMI has become cheaper. Because EMI can increase or decrease
because
depending on market rates.
15 and 20 years of paying back a loan, right?
Sure, that's correct.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Amol, speaking to you. A lot of these topics, I must say, that we've spoken about over the course of the year, but it helps to really put them under the microscope again at the end
of the year and
at the start of the new year. Thank you so much. And
pleasure
again,
to be here, Alex.
Wish you a happy new year.
Thank you. Wish you the same, and to all the listeners.
To you, dear listener, thank you so much for tuning into this conversation. I hope that it helped you out, and I hope that this provides you with a great opportunity to start afresh in 2020 and perhaps to get that vision 2020 when it comes to your finances as well. If you'd like to listen to any of the other podcasts on BQ Big Decisions, you'll find them on the website and on our various podcast applications. Thanks so much for listening. This is Alex Matthews signing off. Have a great day and a great year ahead.
If you enjoyed Big Decisions, check out some other podcasts on the IVM Podcast Network. You can check out Paisa Vaisa, hosted by Anupam Gupta. Advertising is Dead, hosted by Varun Dugirala. The Ronnie Screwvala Podcast, hosted by Ronnie Screwvala. Or Cyrus Says, hosted by Cyrus Procha. These shows are available on the IVM Podcast website, app, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Look, up in the internet. It's a meme. No, it's a cat video. No, it's the Geek Fruit Podcast.
That's right. We interrupt this riveting broadcast to tell you about our show, The Geek Fruit Podcast, where Tejas, Dinkar and I, Jishnu, talk about everything in pop culture, including DC, Marvel, Star Wars, Netflix and everything in between.
You know how your friends hate it when you ramble about some nerdy crap and you just want somebody to listen to you? Well, sorry, there's nothing we can do about that, but come listen to us ramble and it'll almost be like the real thing. Kind of.
Listen to new episodes of the Geek Fruit Podcast every Monday and the Geek Fruit Bulletin every Thursday on iTunes, Google Podcasts, the IVM app, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Happy listening, you nerds.
Hi, my name is Anupam Gupta. I'm B50 on Twitter. I am the host of Paisa Paisa, the show that talks money. On my show, I speak to experts from every field of money and finance, from stock markets, equities, debt funds, credit cards, life insurance, every possible area of money and finance that you can think of. We even did an episode on cryptocurrency. I've got fantastic guests from mutual funds to personal finance experts everywhere. Robo-advisory, startups, just name it, we've got it. At Paisa Paisa, we help you make smart decisions about money. You work hard for money, now make your money work hard for you. New episodes out every Monday, and you can listen to my show on the IVM Podcast app or any other podcasting app that you have.